Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
941, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Time for the weekend health. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Of course, we're going to start off by talking about cold weather, extremely cold weather. Dr. Silver, welcome. Nice to have you with us. But I would imagine cold weather-related incidents are things that you guys will be dealing with in the emergency room over the next few days.
We do see it, and I think folks are always surprised by how quickly the human body gets cold outside, particularly when the weather starts dropping into the single digits and below. So definitely something we want people to be aware of, and there are lots of little simple practical steps you can take to keep yourself warm, for sure.
Tell us some of them.
Well, I think the first is don't go outside when it's this cold. It's one of those if it hurts, don't do it type of thing.
Right.
But in all seriousness, you want to limit, particularly with the elderly and with young children. The instinct is to tell the kids, you know, get outside and play. But you want to limit exposure, particularly with the single digits. Multiple layers of clothing. So, first of all, start with, you know, the old thermal underwear. And, you know, if you don't have those, at least multiple layers. You always want to wear a hat. 30% of the body heat that you lose goes off your head. But also, you want to protect your fingers and toes. So, double socking, making sure you're wearing gloves or even mittens are better because the heat kind of gets distributed between the fingers. And so those are some easy steps you can take, and then limit your time outside. So, you know, with the temperatures this morning being, you know, I think it's 5 degrees here.
Right.
I wouldn't let my kids play outside for more than 10 or 15 minutes at a time and then have them come in, warm up and check their fingers. Certainly if you start to see that the extremes of the body, those are the areas that get frostbite first, which is what we worry about. So things like noses, ears, and fingers. When you start to see a color change, like a white or a loss of sensation to the fingers, obviously that would be a sign that, hey, maybe I should get inside and warm up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there were some visible signs that, you know, things that you should be, you know, that are early warnings that you should get back inside again. So what about breathing the cold weather? You know, a lot of people bundle up their faces pretty good because it's cold and they want to bundle up their faces. But does that protect the lungs, not breathing in this, you know, sub-zero temperature?
Well, it's like anything else. You're exposing that inside of the body to cold temperatures, and that can actually cool you down quicker. So if you have a scarf to put over your around your mouth, that certainly is going to kind of warm the ambient air around the mouth that you're breathing, and that certainly could help, you know, slow the pace of the body temperature dropping.
We were talking earlier, I know this isn't exactly your field of dealing with animals, but we were talking about you know, dressing up your animals in warm clothing. Does that make sense to you, or animals can deal with this on their own?
Well, you know, certain animals, you know, you see the Bernese Mountain Dog, for instance, and they can go outside, it seems like, forever when it's cold outside. So certain animals are genetically predisposed to the cold, huskies, for instance. But these, you know, little doodle mixes and some of the smaller dogs, they can actually freeze very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the booties help with their feet. Number one, because it's cold. Number two, because cold makes edges hard and sharp, and they can cut their toes. And number three is sometimes people use salt to melt the ice, and that some of the ice melt is friendly for pets, but some is not. And not everybody has pet-friendly ice melt, particularly in commercial or retail areas where they're dumping it by the truckload. So it's something to keep in mind with the animals. The other thing, Dean, if I may, is just a quick word about space heaters and kerosene heaters. Any kind of wood burning or really kind of any device that uses combustion to burn, whether it's kerosene or wood, and certainly space heaters with the electrical element, the elements can get hot, overheat, and if you run those space heaters past their tolerance, they can catch fire. So that's a fire risk. So please make sure you have a fire alarm installed in your house. But number two is the carbon monoxide. Mm. Every year we see it. It's totally preventable. And it's always when it's cold outside, people run these heaters inside, or they're ice fishing, or they're out at a camp, you know, hunting or whatever it is that people do. Make sure that you're venting the space so that you don't become sick with carbon monoxide, which is a byproduct of a combustion, whether it's wood or kerosene or what have you. So just a word to the wise.
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. The more modern space heaters have automatic turnoffs, which is great, but a lot of people have space heaters which are not modern and will go and go and go, and that causes the kind of problems that you are talking about with that. That's a good advice and something to be aware of right now. What about beverages in cold weather? You know, people would say, oh, I brought a flask to keep myself warm. Is that a fallacy that an alcoholic drink will keep you warm if you're outside? It actually, I thought it actually makes you colder.
It is a fallacy, and I appreciate you bringing that up. If you have a flask, maybe fill it with hot chocolate or tea. And I know that sounds kind of like a fuddy-duddy advice, but alcohol can make you feel warm inside, but it actually causes your blood vessels to dilate. And when your blood vessels dilate, they dilate everywhere, especially on your skin. And when your blood vessels dilate on your skin, there goes the heat. So it actually is counterintuitive, but alcohol actually gets you colder quicker.
Yeah,
that's a great point.
That's what I thought I had heard that. And, you know, hot chocolate in a flask does not sound like a terrible idea.
That's actually, what I do.
Yeah, it actually sounds kind of delicious, to tell you the truth. I wanted to talk about a couple of health issues that are in the news this week. We heard about red dye number 3 being banned. What do we need to know? Is red dye number 3 something that's super common?
Oh, it certainly is. It's in candies, sausages and hot dogs, in cereals, nutrition shakes, gummy vitamins. It's everywhere. And, you know, I think what we're seeing now is a pullback that's a little late in coming, but we're glad that it's here. These chemicals have a link to cancer. There's also a concern that potentially they're linked to hyperactive disorder in kids. But regardless, you know, the irony here is that this stuff was banned in cosmetics in the 90s because it led to thyroid cancer in rats. And yet we were still putting it in our kids' breakfast cereals, which is just bizarre to me. But regardless, it's coming away. But it's, again, as with any ban, it can't be overnight. You have to give people time to react. And it won't be gone fully until, you know, I think, January of 2028.
Oh, wow.
So something to look at. Unfortunately, it's like you can't breathe the water. You can't drink the water. You can't breathe the air. But I would advise folks, look at, if you're buying something red, I know it sounds silly, but look at the packaging and see if the dye's in there, because it may still be out there in the marketplace for a while.
Is there, I mean, are there alternatives to it to, you know, so you can bypass something that has red dye number 3 and buy something else? Are alternatives available?
They are. I mean, because if you look at, you know, the types of food items, like icing, for instance, you know, certain red or pink frosting, for an example. Well, you can, you know, get a different colored frosting. Or, you know, there may be natural red additives that you can put in, and I'm sure I haven't Googled it. But, you know, for instance, your kid really wanted red cupcakes for their birthday. Well, there's probably some kind of additive that turns frosting red that doesn't have anything toxic in it that you can utilize. So that would kind of be my suggestion. Is there's certainly alternatives, and if you can't find a good alternative, then you can kind of make one based on what's, you know, available sort of through research.
You know, I'm just going through in my mind, I'm thinking about, you know, things that turn things red. Beets would do that. You know, when you make beets, the water in which you boil them, if you're cooking them that way, instantly turn red, as do your hands and,
yes.
and everything else. There must be a way to incorporate, you know, some of that, a natural red, into whatever it is that you want, instead of using this chemical, which we now know is dangerous for you.
100%. I believe there's berries as well. Maybe goji berries can also turn. So I think, You know, certainly beets. Yeah, there's the bottom line is there's always an alternative, and it's just a matter of weighing risks and benefits. That's all.
Yeah, if you've got little kids, why take the risk? Look it up and see what you could do. One of the other big topics health-wise right now is the norovirus, still going strong. I believe the numbers are still going up. Am I correct on that? Of people catching this horrible neurovirus, which is so debilitating. Everybody that I know that has gotten it has said, wow, it just packs a wallop.
There was a hospital in Chicago, I won't name names, but just briefly had to go on diversion because they had so many cases of viral illness, including norovirus. So it can be overwhelming, and it acts quickly. But the good news is it's not rarely is it deadly, and it's very simple to prevent if you're fastidious, if you really kind of keep at it. And number one is so alcohol, any kind of hand sanitizer, I just want to let people know, does not work well against the norovirus. It is impervious to alcohol, which is a big component of these sanitizers. Soap and water will get rid of it, meaning it'll wash it away, but it won't kill it. So bleach is the key. And certainly if somebody in your house has had a diarrheal illness, my suggestion is make a weak bleach solution in the bathtub and just go nuts on the house. The other thing that's easy to do is just get some bleach-based hand wipes, and I would use gloves, you know, latex or nitrile gloves if you're handling them, but you can wipe down all the surfaces in the house with the bleach, like counters and doorknobs especially, because people are constantly touching doorknobs. And those are great ways to kind of try and create a shield against this nasty virus.
Wow, that sounds insidious, that you could wash your hands and it goes down the drain, but it doesn't kill it.
That's right.
It sounds like a science fiction movie, the virus that wouldn't go away.
Well, that's why these things, you know, they're around for billions of years, because they're so wily. They also, by the way, noroviruses are relatively resistant to heat and can survive as high as 145 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh my
gosh. He's a real tough one. So, but bleach wipes and again, washing hands with soap and water will be super helpful to you.
Yeah, there are spray cleaners which contain bleach. Clorox makes one of them, of course. I would assume that something like that might be safe to use, right?
Sure, and if you're trying to save money, and you know, I certainly am not opposed to trying to pinch pennies. You know, you'll pay a premium for those solutions that are pre-made, and they'll say, you know, it'll kill 99.9% of, you know, of organisms. And it's true. But if you just take 5 to 20 tablespoons of household bleach per gallon of water, so that's 10 tablespoons in a gallon. Think about it that way.
Okay.
There you go. That's your nice weak bleach solution, and that's just as good as any product that comes ready-made.
And it's just a matter of really wiping things down in the house with this weak bleach solution to keep the norovirus out.
That's my go-to for sure, Dean.
Okay, wow, that's good to know. What about, are there injections, things like that, vaccinations that people should be taking to fight the norovirus?
Unfortunately, no. I'm not aware of any. You know, I'll just remind folks as they're starting to you know, this is, it's so easy to let this play in your mind. And like you said, it becomes a bad science fiction novel. The good news, if there is good news, is that it doesn't tend to make people so sick that they die. So it's not a lethal, it does not tend to be a lethal virus. It just is miserable and can knock you out and certainly, you know, interrupt your work and childcare and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from people who have had it is, you know, they got through it, but they said it's like one of the worst flus or colds that you could possibly get. So why tempt fate with it all? Great information, as always. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Stay warm out there, Doctor. Go get your hot chocolate.
You too, Dean. Thanks for having me.